We did have one question. I'll welcome Michael first. He's with us now. And
Awesome,
we
sweetie.
did have one
Let's
question.
Hear it.
Yeah. Okay, let me open it up here. And I did send an answer to her. But, wrong email. Hold on. Okay. So she said, she was asking what Jesus would have said, you know, that in the Old Testament it talked about that it was better for God to be the leader, you know, and the Old Testament Israel was always struggling and arguing about the things that God asked them to do. And so they said they wanted to be ruled by judges and kings like the other nations, and then things got worse for them. So she said, what's your take on Matthew 20, 25 through 26? Was Yeshua saying it's still preferable to have God as your king and not like other nations ruled by lords? And I sent back and I said, it's always better to have God as your king. And that was exactly what Yeshua was saying. But he did say, render to Caesar what is Caesar's. In other words, if you play in the world's business, then you owe taxes to Caesar. But everything, the rest, is to God. So do you have anything you would like to add to that one? And you're muted, Michael. Michael, we're not hearing you.
There we are. My screen to switch off on mute had disappeared. Yeah, you know, so much of this stays in the head and in the intellectual realm and, you know, the mind trying to figure it out, especially when the word God is used. And I think a lot of that clears up when we get rid of all the stuff that the word God means in our heads. And there's so much trash from so many people. I mean, go right back into, you know, Yeshua comes forward and he speaks about a creator that is not his, but our Father. And he speaks of it as this creator power as love, whose good pleasure it is to give us the kingdom. And in Aramaic, the kingdom of heaven properly translates as the community of love. We want to get an Aramaic mindset here. So it's his good pleasure to give it to us, and that we've been given a sound mind. Now, if you go back into what the Old Testament Jews were trying to figure out, there's a lot of terror and trauma, hate and vengeance, and just plain old insanity. And everything that these humans had not dealt with, they projected into the brain's image of God. So God became the terrorist. God became the vengeance seeker. God became, and on and on and on it goes. Yeshua brought correction. God is love. The creator is love. So let's get rid of that word God and all the baggage that it means. So let's come back to love. Is it better to be in relationship and live your life in relationship to love, in relationship to who you are and what you're created out of? Or is it better to live in the non-being mind of hostility or fear? That's the question that I hear. And, of course, I don't think we need to answer it. I think its answer is pretty obvious. And to do that, all we have to do is clean up our own minds. And in essence, if you go, there's a passage where a group of disciples are with Yeshua. I like to bring this up often because it's such a reminder. It's a group of disciples, and basically what they say is, what do we have to do to please the Creator? You know, they're still in pleasing mode. They're still in the Old Testament. This guy's out to get us and send us to hell. What do we have to do? And Yeshua tells them. And literally half of his audience replied, this is a hard saying. Who can understand it? And grumbling, they left and never came back. And in essence, you know, the answer that was given when asked is an idiom in Aramaic. What he said is, you've got to eat my body and drink my blood. And of course, those disciples, too hard to say. Well, if our interpretation today of eat my body and drink my blood is wafers and wine, what's the big deal? What is there to not understand? What's hard about it? Why would you leave if somebody said, come to a supper, come and join us for bread and wine? Obviously, there's nothing hard about that. So that's not what he was saying. It's an idiom. What does the idiom mean? In essence, you got to do your work. You've got to eat. You've got to take of the tools that I've offered you to clean up your own hostility and fear-based mind and life. And then what you'll find is you're back in relationship with what you were designed to be in relationship with, and that is the conscious active presence of love, the Creator. Who do you want to serve? So that's, and actually Jeannie and I just, this morning she came up with a quote that I thought was kind of hilarious, and let me just find it here. There's a minister, I've got his name down here, I think. Let me look just a second here. It was a minister that felt like people were not really getting what was being written in the scriptures. This guy named, the guy's name was Eugene Peterson. I don't have his time frame, but it's fairly recently. And he did a translation. He spoke Greek, and so from the Greek he did a translation. And his translation's called the Message Bible, MSG. And here's one of the things he says. The original sentence structure is very different from that of contemporary English. And so I decided, it says, to strive for the spirit of the original manuscripts, to express the rhythm of the voices, the flavor of the idiomatic expressions, and the subtle connotations of meaning that are lost in English translations. And so he quotes, and I've edited a little bit because there are some things in it that hit things that are such a hot button in today's culture that I don't even want to go there, like not my purpose. But in Romans 1:18, and again I've edited it slightly, but this is pretty much it, but I thought it was hilarious when put into a kind of a modern day language. So this would be another way of answering the question. Ignoring love, and wherever in this passage the word God is used, I've put the word love in so that we can get rid of the baggage of all the stuff that people have about God. But he tells people what's going to happen if they fall out of relationship with love. So he says, ignoring love leads to a downward spiral. Acts of human mistrust and wrongdoing and lying accumulate as people try to put a shroud over truth. Reality of love is plain enough. Open your eyes and there it is. By taking a long and thoughtful look at what love has created, people have always been able to see what their eyes, pardon me, with their eyes, what this eternal power, pardon me, which their eyes can't see, this eternal divine energy. So he offers, nobody has a good excuse. What happened to people when they ignored love was this. People, he says, knew love, this is Paul speaking, knew love perfectly well, but they trivialized themselves into silliness and confusion so that there was neither sense nor direction left in their lives. They pretended to know it all but were illiterate regarding life. They traded the presence of love for cheap figurines you can buy at a roadside stand. So love said, in effect, if that's what you want, that's what you get. And it wasn't long before they were living in a pig pen, smeared with filth, filthy inside and out, and all this because they traded true love for a fake God that they made. Worse followed, he says, and this is where I think it gets kind of humorous. Worse followed, a little later on. Refusing to know love, they soon didn't know how to be human either. Women didn't know how to be women. Men didn't know how to be men. Sexually confused, they abused and defiled one another. All lust, no love. And then they paid for it. Oh, how they paid for it. Emptied of love, they were loveless, worthless wretches. Since they didn't bother to acknowledge love, love quit bothering with them, run loose, and all hell broke loose. Rampant error, grabbing and grasping, vicious backstabbing, They made life hell on earth with their envy, their wanton killing, their bickering, their cheating. Look for this in the political realm. See if you can identify any of this in the political realm today. Look at them. Mean-spirited, venomous, forked-tongued, love-bashers, bullies, swaggerers, insufferable windbags. Any of those in the political realm today? They keep inventing new ways of wrecking lives. They ditch their parents when they get in the way. Stupid, slimy, cruel, cold-blooded. And it's not as if they don't know better. They know perfectly well. They're spitting in love's face, and they don't care. Worse yet, they hand out prizes to those who do these things worst. Or best, whichever way you want to look at it. Thank you for that question, because this was something that came from a totally different conversation, and Jeannie had found this translation, which I'd never seen before. And so I went into it, and I was just kind of looking through it, and it's like, this guy has put it into some pretty, you know, present language, and when you listen to it in that present language, as opposed to the antiquated languages we usually look at the scriptures through, it's like, well, this just describes what's going on in the world today. That's the game. Are we ready to go back to, are we ready to face what's in us that's unlike love and go back to the truth of who we are, really, truly functioning as human beings? And you listen to this passage, and then we've shared before a French archbishop from back around 1700. His name was Francois Fenelon. And I'd like to repeat this every once in a while, just as a reminder, you know, and none of this was written for you and I. It goes back over 300 years. Excuse me, I'm just looking it up. Fenelon. Francois Fenelon. So 300 or so years ago, here's how Francois Fenelon described what he discovered about himself and what each person who chooses to do their work is going to discover. In just one second, So here's what Fenelon wrote, and this is back somewhere around 1700. I'm not sure exactly what year, but give or take 10 years. As the light increases, we see ourselves to be worse than we thought. We're amazed at our former blindness as we see issuing forth from the depths of our heart a whole swarm of shameful feelings, like filthy reptiles crawling from a hidden cave. We never could have believed that we'd harbored such things as we stand aghast as we watch them gradually appear. But while our faults diminish, the light by which we see them waxes brighter, and we are filled with horror. Bear in mind, for your comfort, that we only perceive our malady when the cure begins. So here's a man 300 years ago that's saying, you got to dig in and do your work. When Yeshua said, in response to the question, what do we do to please the Creator? And he said, you must eat my body and drink my blood. He was giving a metaphor for you must clean up your mind. You must do your work, the work that I've done. So eat of the tools, take of the tools that I have offered you and work through what you've got. And half the work, just too hard to say, I'm not going there, I'm out of here. And that's what the mind that comes out of that pre-correction time. A lot of people like to talk of it as a new dispensation or a new covenant, but when you think about it, it's a story, it's being lost in a story, which many people want to stick to yet today, of a total, complete projection of everything non-human in our human minds that are projected into our mind's image of the Creator. Basically, the story of the Old Testament. And the Yeshua comes along and he gives a correction of everything. And some people are trying to, make those two things consistent. You can't be in a vengeful, punishing, hell-creating Creator and even start to think about A man who says, our Father, not mine, but ours, who is love. You can't put those two together. You got to go for the correction if you're going to go or not. So it would be my offering. Pick up, do your work. That's what it takes. So that's my thought on that regard. And Miss Cini, do we have anybody else in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room? I know Joan said she was going to be on today.
She is not on yet. And Susan's hand's up, but I don't know if it's left over. Oh, she just answered me. She does have a hand up. I wasn't sure if it was still left over
awesome.
From Kim. So welcome, Susan, 610. You're on the air.
Hi, guys.
Welcome,
it wasn't
lady.
Up for I didn't talk to on Tim's show this morning. And Jeannie, before I ask my question, congratulations on your book. I love seeing it posted. Just let us know when we can get our copy.
I will. It's I've got several people editing, of course, like Michael's editing for content. I've got one lady who is an English teacher, and she's editing it for grammar. She wrote me yesterday and said, you must have been absent from school the day they talked about conjunctions. Anyway.
That's funny.
And I said, that's fine. I said, I appreciate all the edits. I said, so go for it. So anyway, she said
You're
she was kind of fearful. But
she was afraid she was going to lose her head.
Yeah, I said, no. I said, seriously. I said, you know, I wasn't writing it with grammar in mind. I was just getting it out. And I said, so definitely, you know, send me feedback. And so as soon as I get all of the feedback back, and I think I'm going to add one more chapter, but then it is ready to find either I'm going to self-publish, I think that's what I'm going to do, and find a printer and go for it.
That's so great. Well, you know, don't feel embarrassed or ashamed for using copy editors. Everybody needs a copy editor. And the ones who complain and say they don't need it are really, you just can't do it all. It's another set of eyes or several sets of eyes. It's just the best thing before
Absolutely.
You publish it.
Yeah. And I've got a friend reading it, and I said, you know, she's not into the work or anything much. I've introduced part of it to her, but anyway, I told her to read it with the thought in mind, does it flow? You know, have I lost you somewhere along the way, or does it make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So I've got different people looking at it from different aspects, so hopefully when it all comes back together, then we'll be ready to rock. So I'm excited.
So exciting. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thanks.
I know when I was finishing Why Is This Happening to Me Again, I actually had about 10 different sets of eyes that were giving me edits and completed the book. I was actually going to India, and the morning before I got on the plane to go to India, I got the final copy of the manuscript, signed off on it, printed, took it with me, and on the plane to India, I'm reading and I'm marking up edits. And as soon as I landed, I put a call back to say, stop the presses. And I spent another 3 months editing.
That is the way it goes. I know, it's never ending. But, Michael, you've got your hand on or your finger on a topic that's been on my mind, and I've been wanting to call the show for several days, but it didn't seem to fit into what you were talking about. And
right.
Also, my level of upset was so great that I really wasn't being reasonable. I had to do a lot of work myself.
Right.
I've got this quote. You've probably heard it. It's Charles Baudelaire. He says, the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he did not exist. Well, of course, you've got Fenelon, and you've got Carl Jung. You've got people saying, it's in us, folks. We're the ones. But then, and Tim Hayes has been encouraging us to listen to some podcasts having to do with dealing with difficult people, narcissistic friendships, that's going south, and it's just unsalvageable, or if it isn't, ways are being offered to communicate so that a good relationship can be established. What I'm dealing with in my life is grandson Jacob again, and he has gotten to the point again. He insists that he's healthy. He's finishing school. He's getting A's in school. But Tim and I have told him for months that when he's finished school, he's on his own. If he needs something, yes, but we're not planning to pay his rent. No more tuition, no more, you know, park, garage park, no more school, no more food, you know. He's going to be on his own. It's time to spread his wings. And, of course, if he's trying to do that and getting a job that doesn't cover everything, we're in for dialogue. We're here. We're never going to leave. But he's been using, as I told you, he's been using weed and alcohol. And it's gotten to the point where if he weren't so coherent at school, I would think he's having another mental breakdown. I wrote him a love letter. It was my responsibility communication letter par excellence. I worked hard on it. And it was, to my mind, it was loving and encouraging, but also challenging. We cannot pay these bills for you when you are using, when you are still using. We don't want to free up money that you might earn so that you can spend it on that sort of thing. We can't send you any money at all until this is taken care of. I've been tempted to send you photocopies of the texts. I've now blocked him from phone calls and texts because the ugliness of it and the twisting, the way he took my letter was so amazing that I really began to wonder if Baudelaire was right, that there is somebody out there, there is a demon out there, and the demon is similar between one person and another. When they're in this mode, they're a lot alike. They do the same things.
Yes.
And so I've just been in this state of, you know, having to thank God for the tools because I am really fine. But I do wake up in the night and have flashbacks of early childhood violence and all that stuff, and I know we're not supposed to keep telling our story. They just pop into my mind, this helpless, cornered, flesh.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, the feeling of just...
If you're bringing that forward and then bringing love present to it, that's what the healing process looks like.
Well, I'm telling you. So my question is there any possibility that the devil might actually both be in us and also a separate entity?
Well, I think that when somebody lives in the world of denial, remember our definition of denial. When I think or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of something inside of me, I'm in denial.
Right.
Then that person, in order to believe that something outside is cause, has to dissociate from the content of their own minds. They will then populate their minds with those devils.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll put those devils, those things they've dissociated from, into their brain's image of everybody else, and everybody else becomes a problem in their lives.
Yeah.
So if we go to Satan, Aramaic, Satan again, the resister, one who misleads.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I say, when you write what you've obviously consciously worked on out of great devotion to your grandson, I think what you've given that boy is just amazing. And out of great devotion, you've written to him out of love and respect for him and support for him to turn it around and make you the problem. He's in denial, and sooner or later, he's going to have to face his own demons. But the demons are nothing but the personification of those energies he's dissociated from within himself, which, you know, as we've talked about before, some of it's been inherited. and he's had lots of reasons to keep laying it out.
That's
and,
all true.
You know, they're going to, anybody in that posture, until they can start to own it, is going to have somebody that's the devil in their lives. And, you know, if you're the what he perceives as the source of his stress, having no idea that his stress is caused by his goal for you to be responsible for his life,
mm-hmm.
being perceived as the source of his stress, he's going to turn it on you. And that's sadly classic alcoholism and drug addiction. And sadly,
mm-hmm.
the resolution of that looks like hitting the bottom, whatever that looks like, you know, which can be,
yeah.
you know, extremely traumatic and dangerous to, oh, like Luke did, oh, waking up. You put a lot of energy, a lot of money into Luke for him to have this revelation that, ah, I need to clean up alcohol use in my life.
Mm-hmm. Which leads me to a quick question, but it's an aside. I haven't even asked Luke, but he is a master speaker. He is being invited to speak at forums and AA retreats and all kinds of things. And I wondered
That's awesome.
If he would agree to talk on the radio show about his experience, which involves the use of a tool just once at a crucial moment among many other loving interventions of different kinds. But he has
right.
tremendous respect for you because
yeah.
you really were, the tool was there at a crucial moment. And, you know, you don't even have to answer that. And I was going to ask Dr. Tim if he would like to interview him, but I haven't even asked Luke. I mean, who knows, you know, but
I think it'd be awesome to have a conversation with Luke. I think that'd be fabulous and have him share his story, you know, what shifted, what happened for him. I think that'd be very
that
cool.
That would be so great. Yeah, well, great. I'll tell him that. But I'll get off in a second, but I'm not ready to let this evil Satan topic go. What you say, I agree with, and if I totally take it in, I get my full agency back, that I have tools and the ability or even just the hope of not sinking into this darkness. My question is, though, the power of the darkness is unbelievable, indescribable.
The power of denial is unlimited.
Oh,
the power of denial is unlimited. And, go ahead.
Go ahead.
You have to say.
I was just going just that it doesn't seem possible that we create that within ourselves. It just doesn't seem possible. It's too
That's
huge.
That's how powerful
remember,
we are as creators.
God, it's an amazing thought. Just amazing thought. Can't get my mind around it yet.
Yeah. And the quote that you started out with about the devil's greatest trick is to convince us he doesn't exist.
Yeah.
I would turn that quote 180 degrees around. I don't know who, well, I know I've run into that quote before, and I don't remember who it was that said it, but I bet if we go investigate his life, he had some pretty
mm-hmm.
heavy traumatic stuff going on, and he had somebody to blame. But I would take that quote and reverse it. The greatest
okay.
trick the devil ever played on us was to convince us that he even exists. And now anybody who doesn't want to own it can just say, the devil made me do it. They've got the perfect fall guy. Look who did it to me. I didn't have a vicious mouth toward my spouse.
Mm-hmm.
It was the devil that made me do it. See, the devil's making
oh, yeah.
all this happen.
That's very interesting.
I mean, that's the biggest
yeah.
excuse that's going on. And people who don't want to take responsibility, that it's a really convenient thing. You see, well, it's not my fault. See, the devil had me.
So this leads to another question. It was Charles Baudelaire, the French author, who said that.
Right.
We can look it up. What was my question? I forgot my question. Oh, darn, it was a good one, too. It might come back to me, but...
So we'll go review it. The greatest trick ever played by the quote-unquote devil is to convince us mm-hmm. that such an entity even exists.
Okay, and I got my question back. Thank you.
Okay, good. Resonance in the mind.
I have heard, I don't know where from, that it takes a liar to recognize that someone is lying. And I just don't think that's true. I wondered if what you have to say about it. What?
I think it takes one that honors truth to recognize when someone is not speaking truth. Mm-hmm. I would put that on the other side of the equation. I mean, if one, you know, is going to get into the devious aspect of the liar, then, you know, it takes one to know one. It would be a fairly true statement. But if you're really in a space where your life is about honoring truth and someone comes along with a lie, it's going to be easy to spot the deception and that this is not in alignment with truth.
Mm. Good. Good, because one of the things that Jacob is accusing me of as being a liar, and from the bottom of my soul, I am not intending to lie to him, and I think, did I lie? Have I lied? What did I lie about? Well, it's, once again, it's changing our minds. We did say, we'll extend your rent for 3 months, and they don't allow it, so we said, we'll extend it for the 1 month they do allow. And we became liars. But actually, we just changed our mind because the deal was different, and he was using. So we have a, okay. I tend to sort of, you know, think I'm the bad guy until I can remind myself that I don't have to go there anymore yet.
Yeah, and it sounds like what Jacob is doing is admitting that he uses lies in order to get what he wants, and that's about as classic alcohol and drug addict as you can get. And, you know, if you look down through the all the literature about alcohol, the alcoholic leaves in their wake a trail of bodies, people whose lives are shattered because the alcoholic mind, the level of denial is legion, and any tool they've got to get to the next drink or the next blame game, they'll use. There's no ability to honor truth. And certainly when you start to hold the alcoholic accountable, they're going to pull out all the stops. And my support for you would be stand your ground. Just stand it and, you know, Jacob, you can do all the yelling and screaming and blaming and cursing you want. It's not going to change anything. We're here to support you, and our support of you right now looks like you need to be accountable for your life, and we're not going to supply you money to buy drugs and alcohol. And that's just like, you know, you can forget the rest of the conversation. We're just not doing it.
Yeah.
And again, in heading toward the bottom of the barrel, it can be dangerous.
And I know.
You know, who else is this young man around with that kind of language and that kind of verbiage and that kind of blame? You know, who's around in his life that, you know, wouldn't take to the kinds of things he's saying to you so kindly and might strike back? You know, I mean, holding him accountable could look like tragedy. But, you know, if you don't hold him accountable, it's a definite tragedy.
Oh, yeah.
So pretty much. It's probably 95 percentile. It'll be tragedy if you don't hold them accountable.
Right.
But there can be a tragic outcome to holding someone that deeply ensconced in denial accountable for their behavior. And I hear that you want to maintain your connection with him, but I'd certainly support you limiting the amount of abuse that you'll take to zero.
It's down to zero. He has found that Messenger through Facebook is still, I can't block that unless I delete the app altogether. And so sometimes his last communication was using that, and I read it, and it took a while to crawl out of that. You know, good old tools, but...
But you can block him on Facebook.
You can?
So he can't use Messenger, yes. Yeah, you can just block him on Facebook. Oh, yeah, absolutely. You don't need
okay,
to put
I'll
up with
figure out
that.
how to do that. Well, my daughter has had to do the same thing. In fact, she called me and said, Mom, it's time to block him. And he has been sending three-way texts to her new husband, who is the most gentle, loving, understanding person, and to her and to me. For some reason, he wants all of us to hear what he has to say, which has protected all three of us in a way, because we think, well, he's talking to you now. But anyway, she said, Mom, we've got to stop. But she hates to do that because he has no money, and she wants him to eat. So she might text him and say, do you need food money? I'll get a gift certificate for you. I mean, I think in a way she's still enabling him, but that's the best she can do right now.
Yeah, and I understand that.
Very, very, very. Yeah. Anyway, Michael, I don't need to drag this out more. Thank you so much. I almost called you for a session, but I thought, I know what this stuff is. The tools are so good. You can still feel pretty lousy even when you're using them, though.
Yeah, well, and you can feel lousy because you have thought disorders that create feelings of lousy. That's the only reason you don't feel
true.
Lousy.
Yeah.
So,
I do agree.
We can do that with anything and anybody.
Yeah, that's true.
And if I'm feeling lousy, there's my next piece of work.
Touché,
Michael.
There's
my next thought disorder to be removed.
All right, yeah.
Thank you so much. I'll remind you, I've shared this before, but I'll remind you that one of the things that really worked for me, especially when it came to hostility coming up, was that just the intellectual recognition that hostility means my mind is using corrupt data and I'm mentally ill when that's happening. And just saying to myself, this is my mental illness. When I want to blame somebody, this is my mental illness. And when I can own that, I can, you can make huge leaps when you can own that.
Mm-hmm. Good. Yeah.
So holding the space for that young man.
Thanks.
He sounds pretty brutal.
Thank you, Jeannie. Unbelievable.
All right, dear heart.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Thank
I hear you.
So much.
All righty. Yeah. Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye. And you have another hand up?
Let's say hello.
It is Ms. Cammy, 618. You're on the air.
Hi, can you guys hear me?
You're loud and clear. Welcome.
Okay, thanks. I just wanted to speak to the caller that just hung up. I think her name was Susan.
Go for it. That's Susan, yes.
Is that accurate?
Susan, this is Cammy. Cammy, this is Susan.
Hi, Susan. I just want to commend you for stopping the enabling. As a recovering alcoholic myself, I just celebrated a year sober last week. And
yay!
If I would have had somebody to stop enabling me and my drinking, I would have been sober a long time ago. I had agoraphobia. I wouldn't leave the house to get alcohol, but my husband would bring it for me, you know, being the kind-hearted soul that he is. Because he didn't know, and I just want to commend you so much and for holding love for your daughter, who is not able to stop it completely at this point. I just want to say, yay, you! That's all.
Powerful. Powerful. Thank you,
Thank
Cammy.
You,
Appreciate
Cammy.
You.
Thanks. I hope you have a great day.
Maybe Susan has a question for you, Cammy.
Well, Susan, more than welcome.
Hi, Tammy.
Oh, I didn't know we were both on.
I got my connection back. Thanks for the kind words. And thanks for saying it right now because, of course, you know, this kid has no financial resources. Well, he has a choir, believe it or not, a singing job in a choir on Sundays. He gets $75.
So he has financial resources.
Handsome. Well, he has 1 week, $75 a week of resources.
Yeah. And notice,
sorry,
Susan, that you can turn that into, your mind can turn that into, he has no resources. He has them. He doesn't have to take it from you. And he probably has many other resources that if his time, intelligence, money, and energy weren't being locked into alcohol and drugs, he would be able to create his life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
and
a good thing to remember.
Yeah.
Okay, that's very helpful, actually, because I have seen him as kind of helpless. He's a little bit autistic. He has ADHD, and man, he uses them as an excuse for doing what he does. I'm different
and he's brilliant.
From other people. And he is brilliant. And he's talented.
Knows exactly
how
to con you.
Yep. Never knew an alcoholic or a drug addict that wasn't very talented at making sure they got it and keeping that stuff down. Whatever I can do to not deal with who I am.
Mm-hmm.
This life that I'm living, sort of, you know, and you get sober and do this work and life is wonderful.
God.
So, and this can be for your family, you know, the whole family, not just you. I'm so glad you're here and you're doing it, girl.
Thanks, Tammy.
And it might be useful, Susan, to drop him a note about how capable you know he is. And you're glad
that
he has. Remind him that you're aware that he has this $75 job that he can go and just sing and walk out with $75 every week, which is would take care of his basic food needs. And if he spends it in a reasonable way, will take care of his living accommodations aren't all that expensive. And remind him or maybe just acknowledge, and I know that you have many other opportunities like that, and I support you taking them.
Good.
I don't know. I think as a social worker, I would give him resources. I'd say, look, here's resources for food. Here's resources for housing. I'm assuming he's couch surfing. Just from not having any income
Good
at
thought.
All. Or, and give him
well,
those
he's been
resources.
In school.
And so here you go. You know, if he's on the spectrum, he probably, you know, maybe doesn't have those capabilities to know how to access those resources. And with those diagnoses, he can access a lot of them.
So community services.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Shelter, alcohol rehab, you know, food, everything he needs.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
I would be willing
and
to
a whole community right here supporting him.
Yeah, and I would be willing to find resources, help you find resources for him if you would like.
That's so great, Tammy. He's in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He has an apartment through May, and then he's probably going to go. If it's going the way, I know he's terrified of being on the street. And my daughter has said the only support we'll give you for housing is if you go into a rehab program and tackle this habit. And I imagine he'll say yes.
And is he a veteran by chance?
No, he's only 22. He's
okay.
Just a college
just
kid.
Just checking because there's a whole lot of resources out there for veterans.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll check this out. And I don't know, Michael, can we go through you for me to get what I find? Or
if it works, if I've got permission from both of you, I'll pass your phone numbers to each other and you can be in touch.
Sure.
Great.
Works for me.
Cool. All right.
So,
awesome.
Tammy,
thank you.
If you contact me and leave a message, because otherwise I block unknown calls. So.
Okay. No, I understand.
I'll send you her number.
Great.
We got off phone off. Well, I don't have a great record at sending you texts. Seasons, but I'll try that.
Not your fault. Something weird.
I don't get what's going on between our phones. It's crazy. But anyway.
I know.
All right, ladies. Nice work.
See Michael.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thanks,
okay,
Michael.
Take care.
Thanks.
All right, blessings. Appreciate you both.
Thanks.
Right, bye bye. I am in deep appreciation for this whole community that we have. It's pretty awesome. Deep appreciation. So, Miss Ginny, do we have anybody else in the phone queue with a hand up or anything else happening in the chat room?
There are no other hands up. We're down to 9 minutes. Yinka had, I had sent her the book, and she said she planned on reading this weekend. And she's offered to create a PowerPoint and do a session on the Global Book Club when we're ready to publish and advertise it. So that's awesome. Thank you, Yinka.
Awesome. Very cool. Congratulations, sweetie.
Thank you.
And is Joan out there? Joan had texted me, and we talked yesterday, or we texted yesterday, and she said she would be on today to complete our conversation from Friday. Okay, well, I hope everything's okay with her. And we'll see. We'll see what happens.
We only have 9 minutes. Does somebody else have a question? Press 1.
Yeah, rather than starting into a whole new topic or getting back to the Enlightenment book, which I'm looking forward to getting back to, and I'm delighted that it's created as much conversation as it has as well. So we get to... interact on this material. So if you're out there in listener land and you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, our calling number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you're listening to the show. And if you're listening to the show directly on your phone and you push 1, that will put a hand up in the control panel and we'll be having a conversation. So what's on your mind? How can we support you? 563-999-3581. And everybody's just going to be silent, eh?
Apparently so.
Well, then, I have a thought to share. Give me just a moment to find it. I want to go back for a moment again to this, the whole idea of the Aramaic teachings of this man named Yeshua. And I just want to put a reminder in the space that most of the world believes that that which has been written about him is about theology and religion. And my offering is, and that's one of the mistakes, because it keeps people in that arena, or tends to. But what we have in the Aramaic teachings of the man Yeshua is one of the most profound textbooks on physics, on physiology, on psychology and genetics. And most people have been fooled. They don't even know. But that's what it's about. And one of the most profound pieces of the puzzle that you'll find out of that Aramaic language when you bypass the Greek translations. You know, we hear the Greeks telling us in the book of John, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh. And they equate that with a man named Yeshua. But that's a total mistranslation, if you can even call it a translation when it comes from the Greek. I don't really categorize what comes out of the Greek as translation work. It's actually interpretation. But in the original Aramaic, what those words say is, when we properly quote it, is, in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh. And we could literally take that word flesh and translate it as chemistry. So when I recognize that this is about text, about how to consciously live and understand the energy system in which you live, move, and have your being, to understand the rules that govern it, and to be able to apply those rules to your life, and then recognizing that there are tools for achieving consciously living within this energy system. And recognizing that it is an energy system that we live in, and that if we put into that system on any level, whether it's with our thoughts, through our skin, through our mouths, what goes into our mouths or what comes out of our mouths, if we put qualities of energy into the system that don't belong in the system, then the system will begin to disintegrate. Each person's life proceeds according to their own thoughts. And if one suffers from a thought disorder, if one's holding mind energy that's disintegrative relative to their own minds and bodies, then that energy, that mind energy that's stored, will create disease. The whole technology of forgiveness in Aramaic is about the removal of our diseases. Salvation. The root of the word salvation means healing. It's not about, you know, being saved from some demon out there, as the Greeks have made it out. Like, we've had this whole mouthful of puke from Greek philosophy, you know, where the gods raped their own mothers and killed their own children, plugged in as God. That's one of the reasons why I spoke earlier about, let's get rid of this whole concept of God. I'm not saying get rid of God. I'm not saying get rid of Creator. I'm saying all of the mind garbage that people have. Because most of the mind garbage came from the Greeks and the Greek misinterpretations and the ignorance of some of the Old Testament writings, where projection was the game. It was all God's fault. Coming to the correction of Yeshua, that not only are we literally made in the image and likeness of love, but love is the Creator. And when we put energies into the structure that don't match that, then the structure begins to fall apart. If you engage in mind energy that is integrative in nature, then whatever your diseases are, they're going to start to disappear. And if we engage in disintegrative energies, then those energetic patterns will literally become physiology. So according to our thoughts, according to the mind energy, we contribute with each thought we think to either a serene or an hostile projection of the world. According to our thoughts, with each one, we set up whether we live in serenity or we live in trauma. And then according to those thoughts, we'll bring about, because thought is creative, we'll bring about the results. And we're here to support the healing of that dynamic in the world. That's been so full. So delighted to share this time with you. Thank each of you for your questions and thoughts and your support. Have a blessed one. Lots